As we examine the history of the ancient world, we come across four great empires whose power and influence were nigh immeasurable in their time. Indeed, in many ways, some of them influence even our own era. In chronological order, these are the empires of Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. These four empires played major roles in the history of the Jewish people. It was part of God's plans that these four empires would each impose a bitter gullus, an exile, upon the Jewish people. Each of these empires appeared to be in charge of the world. Consequently, each, as it were, obscured God's kingship of the world and minimized his honor and glory. Also, each had a unique characteristic and presented a unique challenge to Jews and Jewish living. It has been part of the historic mission of the Jew to grow by meeting each of these challenges. The Jew must show that God's will, as expressed in his Torah, will always define the norms and values in his or her life, and that the stumbling blocks presented by these empires are irrelevant. It is easy to understand the terms Babylonian exile and Persian exile. Each period saw an interval in which the Jews were without the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, and without their homeland. During our current exile, initiated by the Romans in the first century of the Common Era, we spent close to 20 centuries without sovereignty in the land, and we are still without the temple. The puzzle is that the period of Greek rule is also called an exile. During the period of Greek rule, we were living in the land of Israel, and we had the Holy Temple. How can that period be called an exile? To answer that question, we must learn a little bit of history and then truly understand the word exile. 23 centuries ago, when Alexander the Great died, the Greek Empire was divided among his four generals. General Ptolemy was given the region that contained the land of Israel. A century later, control of the Ptolemaic region was wrested from the Ptolemaic dynasty by the dynasty founded by General Seleucid. When Antiochus IV Epiphanes ascended to the Seleucid throne, he began his crusade to Hellenize the Jews and eradicate Judaism. Indeed, many Jews had already chosen to throw off Judaism in favor of Greek patterns of living and thinking. And that generated the Greek exile. Exile in the Torah's lexicon is a state in which God's presence and supervision appear muted or even absent. The state of exile is generated by a weakened commitment to the Torah. That weakness prevailed during the Greek era, but it can certainly crop up elsewhere. Indeed, it is important to realize that every time we adopt a mode of thinking or living from non-Jewish culture, we arguably recapitulate the Greek exile in microcosm if that mode is inimical to Judaism. There are two examples of this that deserve special attention. People who want to achieve will set standards of accomplishment for themselves. As the saying goes, progress is made when progress is measured. This may refer to academic performance, athletic prowess, or spiritual attainments. But a danger lurks therein. Often, under the influence of the majority culture, people will hinge their entire feeling of value and worth on their success. They say to themselves, if I get the A+, or the gold medal, or the raise, then and only then will I be worthwhile and valuable. The bitter reality is that human beings fail. Visions of material or moral success are not always realized. And that can be a crushing experience when the entirety of one's feeling of self-worth is dependent on one's accomplishments. How refreshing, then, is the Torah approach, as elucidated by the great sage Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik of blessed memory and others? The Torah tradition teaches us that every human being is created in the divine image. Consequently, every human being has immeasurable value and is entitled to be treated with respect and dignity. And that certainly includes how one treats and views oneself. Moreover, the tradition tells us that every Jew is a prince or princess, that every Jew is considered a child of God, merely by dint of being a Jew. Imperfections and failures are merely barnacles on the QE2, merely gravy stains on a gorgeous silk tie. The beautiful tapestry is no less priceless for its few loose threads. Of course, this is not dispensation to sit back and relax. It merely puts achievement in a different light. And certainly, one who strives mightily to succeed spiritually is entitled to an enhanced feeling of self-worth. Another red flag is the majority culture's inordinate preoccupation with pleasure. 50 cable TV stations aren't enough. We need 100. Regular TV viewing is insufficient. We need plasma TV and HD TV. PlayStation 1 and 2 were inadequate. We need number 3. The list goes on and on. A Jew, of course, is not opposed to pleasure. Indeed, we praise and thank God for pleasure when we make a blessing over food or fragrances. But arguably, in Judaism, the focus and emphasis is on joy. What's the difference? Allow me to share with you a true story. And I have the permission of the protagonist to share this story with you. Several years ago, our family celebrated a milestone birthday for Imi Morasi, my mother. We had found out that she wanted a portable CD player, and indeed we purchased one for her. We also purchased for her a menorah for Hanukkah that was crafted to resemble the Western Wall. For years, my mother has told us that the wall is extremely meaningful to her. When the day of the birthday party came, we presented our mother with her presents. She opened up the CD player first, not knowing what was in store for her in the other gift-wrapped package. She expressed her gratitude and clearly was very satisfied with this new present. And then she opened up the package with the Hanukkah menorah. And she began to cry. She was extremely moved by this present, as her love for the wall is unbounded. From the CD player, there was pleasure. From the menorah, joy. Another example. Imagine you're a heart surgeon. The fellow on the operating table will probably die within 6 months if the surgery is unsuccessful. He has a wife and 4 young children. The surgery lasts for 10 hours. At the end of the surgery, it appears that all went well. You, the surgeon, go out to the waiting room. You're sweaty, hungry, and drained. You desperately need a shower, a meal, and a bed. The surgery was not a pleasurable experience. But when you give the good news to that wife and those kids, boy, are you joyous. Which feeling, then, is superior, joy or pleasure? Which feeling is deeper and more richly satisfying? Of course, the joy. When a person sees that they have accomplished what they value, they have joy. And willy-nilly, valuation is connected to God, whose Torah reveals to us what is truly valuable. The OU family wishes you and your family a joyous Hanukkah and a joyous life.